Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is there for you 52 weeks of the year. Come rain, come shine, bank holiday weekend or not, we will always make sure you have your fill of rugby when you head back to work. Or in this case, maybe if you're in the UK, a day before you go back to work. And...
well, beers, aren't we?
Cheers, boys. Bloody hell, Phil.
Sorry.
You shake that one
dear.
Up before you gave it to
dear.
Me.
Oh dear, you amateurs.
I didn't, but
no, well, cheers. I did before I handed them to you.
Did you?
That's it.
Cheers, JB.
JB's right. JB and I were just re-watching the Toulouse-Harlequins game, and JB said, do you know what? Phil will have some cold beers in the fridge.
He always does. He's good for this.
Drops him a message, and then Phil turns up with a box of chilled...
Well, he had to make up.
Session IPA.
He had to... make it up to us, because I had a plan. My plan tonight was do the podcast early, about 6 o'clock, and light my barbecue at 6, get it done by 7:30, have some steaks, and then go out. But Phil delayed it till 8, so he has to bring beer.
So we have
I'm
to have,
sorry.
So we're having steaks at 10 instead, yeah?
No, we don't have time for steaks.
Apologies, I've been a busy boy.
Today. Have you? Where have you been?
Up in Trough of Bowland.
Where?
Near Lancaster.
Okay. Near walking again.
Where we got married. Not walking, but I am knackered. I did my longest ever cycle bike ride, just shy of 90 kilometres and 1,600 metres of elevation.
50 odd miles, that's just... with dales, uphill and down dale.
Yeah.
I don't mind the down dale bit. It's the uphill bit I don't like.
I do... I'm quite a fit guy, and I do a bit of endurance these days.
Humble brag.
Quite a fit guy, you know me. Today nearly broke me.
Really?
Really. So I run probably 3-4 times a week. I hit the gym 3-4 times a week, but never more than an hour. Like, that's kind of my maximum session.
Yeah, low volume, high intensity. That's how you train.
3 hours into this, and... I've done 60-65k. I've got another 20-25 kilometres.
Was it an organised thing, or was this just you planned it?
Well, it was just me and Claire. So I'm doing a big bike ride nearly twice this distance in about a month's time.
Oh, okay.
And this was like my first training session for it, and I've realised I may be bitten off more than I can chew. But I was humbled by Claire. She found it so much easier than me. Embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
Well, when
it?
You're going uphill, being as light as Claire is helps. That's why.
And she's got narrow. She went for a bike fit and got told she's got narrow shoulders, which is good for a cyclist. Yeah. I don't have narrow. I'm like a ball on a bike.
Joe Launchbury should have ridden bikes. There we go. Brought it back to rugby eventually.
Well, yes.
Well, I'm a bit hungover today, boys. If I'm hungover, I may as well go drinking again. I went to Toc H's centenary dinner.
There's a lot of these dinners going on.
Centenary.
Yeah. Centenary.
Awesome.
300 people. In Old Trafford Cricket Club.
Who was doing the after dinner speaking?
We didn't have enough dinner speaker. We had an MC, and do you know, it was better because there's so many people there you want to talk to, and so many people I've not seen for a long time. Do you know what they did do though before the dinner? They got the MC to interview the club's longest serving member, who has been a member of the club for like 2/3 of its time. It's even been in existence.
Wow.
Peter Bradley.
That's cool.
And that was far better.
Awesome.
I much prefer listening to the thoughts of Peter on the club and what the club was like when he first joined than I care about a 2003 World Cup winner.
Well,
awesome.
Well, talking of 2003 World Cup winners, so I was working at Twickenham. I was commentating on the Army-Navy games. and Mark Regan was the co-commentator for the men's match.
We need this like a hole in the head, as he famously said when Johnny Wilkinson kicked over the points.
He had come down, so I travelled down from Manchester, and Mark Regan had come down from Liverpool, because he was last night doing the club dinner at West Park St Helens.
Was he?
Awesome.
Yeah. That's cool.
And I jokingly said, oh, you know, it's... your work is going to dry up a bit if England ever win another World Cup. And he laughed and went, England losing is the best thing for business.
Yeah, for his wallet.
For the 2003 winners. Like, they've had a solid 21 years now of no other England team being able to say they won it.
There's always a joke in the NFL that it's a 1960-something Dolphins team pop champagne every time the unbeaten team loses.
Yeah. I bet he's got his... Just like you, Cocker, who's got his South African shirt, his South African flags.
Yeah.
For the last two World Cups.
Yeah. Nice. What is Mark Regan like? Good bloke?
He's a really good bloke. So he went to school at the school that I first taught at.
He's Bristol Boys, isn't he?
Bristol Boys, St Brendan's Sixth Form College, mate. No, he was top value. And exactly what you kind of want in... when there's just two of you and you want the analyst slash colour person slash summarizer or whatever, you kind of want them just to do one of those things really well. If you're really good at analysis, tell me, like, gnaws off about it.
Yeah.
If you're really good at summarizing, yeah, just tell lovely, paint lovely pictures in people's minds. Mark Regan just says exactly what he thinks all the time. Oh, that was awful. Terrible game. Terrible game management, that. What are they doing? I loved it. It was great.
Wonderful.
I like that. I like, and obviously in that environment, he can be probably a little bit more outspoken than he might if he was in a Discovery Plus or TNT Sports.
Yeah. I do and I don't. So when Austin Healey points out errors in games, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. When Brian Moore's got that infamous clip of just losing his mind, he just,
for God's sake, he's kicked it away again.
Oh, yeah, absolute moron. So I guess it depends, doesn't it?
It does. I know I've said this before, but I do quite like the Six Nations commentary because it's like a throwback to a different time.
Yeah,
I
would not want it every week when I'm watching the Premiership, but for a few games a year, I quite like it.
There's something
nostalgic.
There's something nostalgic, and there was something lovely where it was the smooth voice of Eddie Butler over-pronouncing French people's names.
Yes.
With Jiffy shouting, "Numbers!" and Brian Moore moaning and just talking non-stop about the scrum.
Yeah, well, there's a throwback to something else, or we'll talk about throwbacks later, but we'll save that for maybe after the Northampton... Maybe after we talk about Northampton-Leinster.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Well, let me just say, contactheadchasers@gmail.com is where you can get in touch with emails. And a reminder to anyone that is available on the weekend of the 6th of July.
Yes.
North Dorset Sevens. Egg Chasers are putting a couple of teams in. The Vet Sevens, the Social Sevens, the Super Social Sevens. Don't know why I'm doing the Bristolian accent,
It's the accent of rugby.
Yeah. So we want you, either, I mean, come along and be a social member and just come and join in with the court session and the day. We've got administrative roles we can appoint.
Yeah, we've just like your local council, we never have filled all of our administrative roles.
And yeah, it's a bottomless pit of administrative roles and red tape and rugby bureaucracy.
Oh yeah, I've got loads of those roles.
But if you're an incredible player, then contact tedchasers@gmail.com.
Now, just before you continue, there's two people that contacted me a while ago. I never forwarded it on to Major Lee. So I apologise to you. We do want you. I just can't find your email anywhere. So if you're listening to this and you've not heard back from Major Lee after saying you want to join the Sevens, email me again, please. I do apologise, but I can't find your email anywhere.
There you go.
Yeah. And also, I just want to address one little minor elephant in the room.
Ooh, minor elephant.
Which is that we had a lot of people enjoy our Patreon podcast last week.
Yes.
We had a lot of new patrons. We're very grateful to the people that help keep the lights on. It's not easy. You know what your own electricity bill is like, and there's a lot of equipment here.
There's a lot.
It saps a lot of energy. So thank you very much for help keeping the lights on and making sure we're there for you 52 weeks of the year for over 10 seasons now. And giving you extra content for it as well. But we referred to a text message. And I'm just going to say that the text message was not directly dealt with on the Patreon pod.
It was. So the subject was dealt with in detail, but we didn't disclose which subject the text message referred to.
JB had a crisis. He had a...
There's no way.
He had a moral quandary, which he decided the answer on after we'd done the podcast. Anyway, point is, we'll have more great patron stuff coming your way.
I'll run you through my decision process and why I can't disclose text off the many people that text me in the game every single week. Oh, because of that, in a Patreon podcast.
Patreon.com/eggchasers. But thank you very much for signing up. Yeah, and it's less than half a pint of beer a month, and you get loads of extra stuff. So thank you very much for getting in touch there. We have had, I'll try and pepper the podcast with a load of these emails which we've got.
Wonderful stuff. So I guess we should talk about the Heineken Cup. And sorry, Investec Champions Cup.
Yes.
When's it not going to be the Heineken Cup in your mind?
Well, we kind of had the break, didn't we, for several years.
And this is why no one until Investec wanted it, because of exactly what you say.
Mm. Yeah. So I do still call it the Heineken Cup.
I do as well.
But I often just type ECC on WhatsApp, but then I know that no one knows what that means. And also ECC could be European Champions Cup or European Challenge Cup. So
this is true.
It doesn't really work.
Yes. So it's going to be the Heineken Cup for at least another year or two.
Yes, definitely.
Now, who watched Leinster versus Northampton in real time?
Me.
What did you think?
So, this was a very, very interesting game. I thought it was going to be an incredibly boring game.
Mm.
First half, Northampton looked all at sixes and sevens. Leinster kind of flexing their muscles, barely got out of third gear. James Lowe scored his two tries in the first half, then got his hat-trick shortly after half-time. And I was convinced at half-time that Saints were going to do nothing. But it was really interesting hearing Sam Vesti, I think it was towards the end of the first half, and I thought it was a done deal, and he was so kind of calm. And just,
he was, wasn't he?
He just was like, the guys will figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, they're seeing something different, and Austin Healey in comms was pointing out the inconsistent, like single blitz to totally disrupt the flow of the Northampton attack, which it did phenomenally successfully early on. But he was so kind, he just said, yeah, they'll sort it out. Trust the guys, trust the systems. And Northampton did sort it out, and I was really rooting for them at the end.
I
really, really was. I was gutted when they didn't quite make it.
Well, I think the most prominent part of Northampton's performance was exactly how bad they were in the first half.
They really were.
I mean, they weren't playing bad rugby, but they weren't catching the ball.
They couldn't string any phases together. And phase play for Northampton is what they've been so good at.
Mm. James Ram's drops were unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. Because as a winger, you only get the ball a handful of times. It's like a goalkeeper. Only are called upon a handful of times.
You are absolutely right. The flip side to this conversation is what's happened to the Leinster attack that Stuart Lancaster built? What's happened to it?
Well, they just don't seem to do the Sexton loop anymore, do they? Like, they disappear. And I'm kind of serious about that. Is it Sexton or is it Lancaster that's left this problem here?
Well, the two at the same time. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, great point. It is a great point. And also with Nienaber, but I know certainly Gibson Park and others have spoke about how focused Nienaber is on defence.
Mm. Yeah. And that has stepped up, no question.
And defence is ultimately what wins things. And Lancaster didn't win many things.
So except the Champions Cup. And
he did not win that. He showed up at the time when they did win it. Right, it's a very big difference.
Is that like the Liverpool thing? Rafa Benitez won the Champions League with Gerard Houllier's team.
Yeah.
Isn't that a...
I mean, like, Lancaster is so lucky because, you know, people always refer to the World Cup final as Lancaster's team. It wasn't Lancaster's team. It was bloody Eddie Jones's team. So he gets credit for things he doesn't do, and he gets let off for things he does do.
Well, he's proving the world wrong at Racing 92 now.
But Leinster's attack is...
what's he doing at Racing 92 now? Where are they?
In the playoff spots. So Leinster's attack isn't as good as it has been. That said, they're without Hugo Keenan, they're without Gary Ringrose. Jimmy Osborne was fit but only on the bench in this one. If all those players are fit and well, that's important parts of the machine. However, I just don't think Ross Byrne has it. I do not think he has it. I mean, I'm not just talking about the missed kicks.
But they're important.
They are important, but he's not elite. He's not an elite 10.
Yeah.
He's very good.
He might grow into
one. He's not elite. I don't. He's 28, 29.
No, he won't grow into one. But there again, it's hard to say with Leinster, isn't it? Because how do you become a world-class 10 if you're not put in pressure situations? So he's got a load of game time.
Yeah, he's had more game time than Sexton over the last seven years. It's always back to Sexton.
It's always back to Sexton, isn't it? And I think you need to learn those really tough lessons.
Well, he's played loads of international rugby as well.
He's played a bit of international. He's played a bit of... I'm sure he started finals, has he not? I think they've started him ahead of
Sexton. I put it like this. So there's a trend in the NFL and in rugby to have these explosive running threat quarterback/tens.
Yeah.
And it's still fine to be a traditional, classic, All-American quarterback.
Yep.
Or a traditional rugby 10. But those
Andre
people,
Pollard.
But if, yeah, yeah, Andre Pollard, perfect example. Andre Pollard, Owen Farrell, if you're a quarterback
Sexton.
And you're Tom Brady, you have to be the shit at all of those things. If you cannot run, you can sit in the pocket, be really brave, and just hit your man under massive pressure, that's the equivalent of Andre Pollard with a clutch kick. Ross Byrne does not have that to that level, and he cannot offer any of the other things.
Yeah, well, that interception showed he's not the fastest. You know, you intercept a pass in midfield and you're a back, you need to score.
Yes.
So you're right on the physicality side, he's definitely not fast enough. I still think there's something in the fact that he's always had a safety net. Like, there's never been a time when he is the absolute man, whether it be for Ireland or for Leinster. And that might change him, but you know, it's a long shot.
But Johnny Sexton, age 21, was in that same situation and was going, yeah, but I'm going to be.
But not for Leinster,
I will be.
He was for Ireland, but not for Leinster.
When they played Northampton in that final, he came on off the bench.
For Jimmy Gopith?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wasn't Sexton playing in 2009 when they played Leicester and beat Leicester?
Maybe.
I want to say 2000.
I don't want to go too hard on Ross Byrne. All I'm saying is I'm looking ahead to Toulouse and then beyond and to next season and stuff. It's an issue that they need to solve. I know Sam Prendergast has got a lot of people very excited about him. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they had no real edge. But there again, where's that edge come from? Because in previous years, we've marvelled at their ball carrying and their consistency of the ball carrying, the way that they have the various types. You know, they take contact early to recycle the ball quickly. Then they've got the nice feet of Van der Fleers. I just suddenly thought when I was watching Van der Fleer, actually, he is starting to get a bit old now. They are starting to sort of get on a bit in age.
He got sat down by Curtis Langdon, didn't he?
Oh my word. Was it Curtis Langdon that...
It was Laws and Langdon between them.
Langdon was unreal this game.
He was great.
He was unreal. That boy is ready for England.
I agree. You said it maybe 12 months ago.
I said we played for Sale.
Maybe 2 years ago. I hadn't seen it at that point. I agree now.
And I'll say this, contactedchasers@gmail.com. Jack Edwards on the email says, love the pod, blah. Halfway through the Saints game, result not great. Any of you want to join the Curtis Langdon Appreciation Society? He seems like the natural replacement for Jamie George at England with his performance at Saints. Class set-piece hooker, tidy in the loose. New Zealand tourist? Well, JB's was the founder member of the Curtis Langdon Appreciation
Honestly,
Society.
When he was at Sale, so he didn't just get to Sale. I think he's been to Newcastle, he's been to
London Irish. Irish.
He's been around a bit.
Worcester.
He's been loaned out.
France at one point.
Montpellier.
Yeah.
Loaned out. His time at Sale, he was loaned out to Mac, Donny and Fylde.
Yeah, wow. He's really done it the hard way. Now, when he had a little bit of stability at Sale, he looked great. And then, of course, there was Worcester, and then from Worcester, it was Montpellier, and just struggling to really assert himself. He's got that run of game time in a stable system now. We can just see what a class player he is. Mm-hmm. But I think his problem is he's not, as a player, I think he's one of those guys that does better in games and training. Because if you look at him, he doesn't have exceptional hands. He's not massive. I don't think he impresses anyone in the gym. You've just got to see the boy play in a game.
Let the boy play.
Let the boy play.
2009, Leicester versus Leinster in Edinburgh. Starting 10 for Leinster was Johnny Sexton.
Wow, there you go.
Want to guess the starting 10 for Leicester Tigers?
Andy Good.
Not Good.
Flood.
Not Flood.
Vesty.
Vesty.
Ah, yeah, very good. Very good.
That just going back to attack, I do think you're right in saying that. Well, I just think maybe that Leinster, being as good as they are, because they are, you know, personnel, they're absolutely outstanding. I think they might have just neglected the attacking shape. And I think attacking shapes have come on so much, even in just this last 12 months, 18 months. If you look at Northampton, look at Harlequins, you look at the French teams that you're watching, Leinster are not that. They are very, very nuts and bolts. And the nuts and bolts are awesome, so they can afford to get away with it. If they've got a good defence, great. And they've got class individuals. So I think it'll come, but it's not this version of the team.
And that is quite a Nienaber way of building things. Mm. It's his first year, you get the basics in place, and then you can build on top of that.
With RG Snaiman and Jordy Barrett, that'll help.
Yep.
That will massively help. Yeah, you can build us up. If you choose to, or if you just choose to play your simple attritional rugby, which is... at least in part, what was won South Africa the last two World Cups, then you do that.
It's an interesting quandary, isn't it? Because if I had a team, I would definitely do it the Nienaber way. I mean, although I say do it the Nienaber way, bloody hard. You can only do that with absolutely world-class players at your disposal. I mean, what would happen if he didn't have a Peter Steftatoy and a Quagga Smith? But he does have world-class players. So
both in South Africa and in Leinster as well. There are world-class. The 10 situation is interesting, though, because is it time to say, Ross Byrne, you may still be the number one, but you're not the future, therefore... it won't happen this season, I don't think.
No, not this season.
Because they have got highly rated the other Byrne, Prendergast, and others, no doubt. At what point do you go all in on one of those, or do you just risk them becoming Ross Byrne Mark II because they don't get the big game experience?
Yeah, you go with the younger lad, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't the case that they gave the keys to Johnny Sexton going, he'll be great in a few years. He demanded that he's a generational, he's just different, isn't he?
I don't know.
Same with Owen Farrell. He wasn't given. It was like Owen Farrell took the tenure.
George Ford took for Leicester when he was 17, 18.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them did have influential dads. Let's not forget this. It's not as if they have no say on the future of their career.
Maybe.
When they were coaching in Saracens and Bath and Leicester, respectively. But yes, I take your point.
Yeah.
I wonder who Finn Smith's dad is. Because he's doing all right.
He is doing very well. Doing very well. Leinster, I'm so glad that Northampton came back into it.
Yeah.
I said it before, I was gutted. I was gutted for Courtney Laws because he was magnificent. He was so good. His work rate everywhere, particularly on the floor, was superb.
And that was his last Champions Cup game.
Well, yes.
Unless he stays at Brive for several years and they do something remarkable.
So have Brive gone up yet?
No, they're not going to go up.
They're not going to go up.
So they'll have a shot. Do you know who else they're signing? Is there any other big names?
I don't know. But all I know is that I think Provence are in with a shout of winning either top or getting into that second place for a playoff. And that's where George North and a couple of others are going.
Mm-hmm. George North's going to Provence?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I know. What a life.
I know. What a waste of money. What a waste of money. Like I would not pay Courtney Laws to play at Brive. I just wouldn't do it. Like, there's just no way that is a good move.
I think it's a British guy that's bankrolling Brive.
Really?
I think so.
Christ.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I think Courtney Laws adds huge value to a Toulon or a Toulouse or someone who's going to compete at the very highest level. What has he got to offer? I mean, you know, he's obviously very good, but it's like, this is just a waste of money. It's a complete and utter waste of money.
It does feel like it. It feels like he could go to, say, Toulouse and do the role that Jerome Kano did.
Exactly.
For three or
that's
four
exactly
years.
That's, what I have in mind.
That is the kind of signing he should be.
Yeah. You know, you use him sparingly, you know, kind of like Newcastle used, this is an old school reference now, because Newcastle have not had anything worthy to talk about for a long time, the way that they used to use Matthew Burke back in the day. Doesn't really train, We know he's good enough. We'll just use him as and when.
And you don't need that kind of player for the meat grinder league games. You know, Toulouse know that they're going to finish in the playoffs. They know they're going to get to the knockout stage of European rugby, and that's where that kind
and
of
I don't begrudge. I don't begrudge Courtney Laws. In fact, I'm delighted for every single one of these €600,000 he's going to be earning every year.
Yes. I hope it's that. Is that what it is?
That's the rumor.
Good.
600 kegs, which I think is amazing, but everyone at Breve is going to know, not that there's anything wrong with that, is going to know that's the only reason he's there. Because like Jack Willis, for example, I'm sure he's been very handsomely rewarded, but he can also tell a story, which is also true. I have no doubt that he's there to win trophies, to become a better player, to play with some of the best players in the world.
Absolutely.
Courtney Laws is there for cash, and I don't begrudge him that at all.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. He's not there.
But you're right, it is a shame that someone so good, still so good, amazing in the World Cup, brilliant in the Champions Cup semi-final.
He's still one of the best back row players in the world.
Yeah.
He's all wrong.
The problem is, it's infrequent now. So he is excellent when he plays, but you couldn't possibly deploy him every single week.
No,
and that's the problem with getting old. You know, you can only do it infrequently. So yeah, I don't like the move, but you know, is what it is.
I'm just looking at the Breve team for next season on All Rugby, not a website I've used before. They have got some notable non-French players. They've got Ross Moriarty there.
Okay.
They have got not that many others. They do have fly half / centre Stuart Alding.
Yep.
Of Ulster fame and infamy.
He's done well to avoid all the hatred coming the way of
Paddy Jackson. Did all the heavy lifting there, didn't he?
They've got an English fullback called Lewis Noon on their books.
Lewis who?
Lewis Noon.
Never heard of him.
No.
By the way,
famous surname.
We'll come back to the Champions Cup. I think we may have mentioned it, but it's just worth.
Well, Jamie Noon is an agent in France.
Is he?
He was doing some agency work, whether he is or not. I know one of his clients. You know, one of his clients that I'm aware of.
Well, and who did Jamie Noon play for between 2010 and 2013?
Breve.
Interesting. Yes. That is interesting.
Yes.
Sorry. Go on. Who was a
fly half?
I just want to pin it. Oh, is this something else?
So can you guess who Jamie Noon's client was that I kind of know?
Fly half for sale. Cipriani.
No.
I know.
It's the only client that Mugford. I know he had.
Mugford.
Yes, Dan Mugford.
Dan Mugford.
Good old Dan Mugford.
Killing it at CrossFit, though.
Yeah.
Follow him on Instagram. His CrossFit's amazing. I think he's one of the top CrossFit competitors in the UK, which is mad considering, you know, how his conditioning was at Sale. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like it is now.
Yeah, it wasn't elite.
No, it's kind of like it's very similar to the other way that. No, this is probably not an unfair comparison, but I'll make it anyway. The way that Freddie Flintoff was not exactly in great shape when he was a professional sportsman.
Yes.
But then got an incredible shape as soon as he quit professional sport.
I mean, comparing Dan Mugford to one of the greatest all-rounders of all time.
Well, he's not. I tell you what, he's not as good as Dan Mugford at CrossFit.
No.
Can't lift like...
He can't look like he's a dying salmon whilst hanging onto a bar.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, we'll come back to the Champions Cup, but I just want to pin it, because you were talking about English players and fly halves playing abroad. The potential story that is bubbling with Zach Henry is very, very special.
Oh, yeah.
As in he might win the league?
They lost last week, but they are still top of the table, Stade Francais, and rejected by Leicester, not wanted, not thought surplus to requirements, and absolutely killing it in the top 14.
Well, he wasn't rejected as such.
Well, he was not offered a contract.
No. Where was he? So he was somewhere first. I can't remember where it was. Somewhere in England first. Then he goes to France and makes a name for himself. And then Leicester have done this to
him. He was playing Pro D2. Went to Leicester. No, I'll tell you why in a minute.
So Tim, just to colour this in, Tim's refusing a beer.
I'm still enjoying the session IPA that Phil's got me, but I'll tell you why I'm drinking very slowly in a minute.
I can't wait to hear this.
But anyway,
no.
Yeah. That lovely fabric on that sofa.
Oh God, the linen.
Oh, God, sorry.
My linen sofa.
Let's get back to the Champions Cup. And what was I going to say? How good was Croke Park, though?
Okay.
Are you
a fan of it?
So the atmosphere
looked awesome.
The atmosphere looked cool. It was... So did you watch the kind of build-up where there was the kickoff was delayed by 10 minutes?
I didn't see
that. And they had 10 minutes to fill. And they were talking about how much harder it will be for the kickers who are kicking for touch because the hoardings are 8 metres away from the
That's
pitch.
That's probably a good point.
Instead of 2 metres away from the pitch. But it did kind of... It felt like a weak point to me, to be honest. These are professional kickers who will practice in a training ground with no hoardings, presumably.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually.
80% of their kicking, they have no hoarding. And now the hoarding is just slightly further away.
Yeah, okay. And really, I might take the point generally if you're talking about kicks that are taken from the middle of the pitch where it may be slightly difficult to see exactly where the white line is. But from most parts of a pitch, you see exactly where the line is.
Yeah. Okay. It really did feel like they were just filling time for 10 minutes. They'd exhausted everything they planned to say.
What was the game where Will Greenwood lost his mind? And it was something like... It might have been like the Rugby Championship. It's Will Greenwood... And the link cuts out, and Will Greenwood's got to do a monologue to the camera with one presenter for best part of, well, I mean, it felt like six decades, but it could well have been like 3 minutes.
The best. So here's a little peeling back the curtain. So when the post game stuff is going on at rugby grounds, just have this in your mind next time it's happening. The reporter who's there asking the DORs, the man of the match, all those questions on the board, the sponsor board, asking all those interviews. Has to stand there with the microphone, can't go. Even when your last interview's done, it's like, no, you've got to stay there because if something happens to that camera, you've got to basically be the one that picks up and just chat shit until the end of the programme. So every time I was stood there, just in the back of my mind, it's not going to happen, but it could happen.
Yeah, it could happen.
And you're talking about a time when something like that
happened. It could, yeah. Christ.
Going to have to filibuster this one.
What was the one I was thinking about then? Oh, it's escaping me. Oh, yeah. Does Will Greenwood still do his podcast?
I don't know.
Because they made a real big play on the Sky Sports Will Greenwood podcast. And have they just abandoned it?
I don't know. I think they've abandoned rugby full stop.
Yeah, I think they had some really big guests and all sorts. And in fact, did they not do... They did. They did the same podcast show as us.
The podcast live?
Yeah.
At Twickenham.
Yeah, which, I don't mean to be unkind.
Unkind, because I'll be unkind in a second. It was the weirdest experience I've ever had.
That was weird. So we got a company approached us and said, Rugby World Cup's happening. It was 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
So just before, so we're thinking, we put on some live shows at Twickenham. We'd love you to come along and do it. And then each podcast will you know, sell some tickets. And so it ends up being a bigger day and you reach out to new crowds and it'll be a great atmosphere, what rugby's all about. So, yeah, that sounds absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
And there was about four different podcasts or shows or things that were there, all of whom, you know, tried to sell tickets. And I got from the horse's mouth 99% of tickets for which were sold by us.
Yes, I heard that, which doesn't surprise me. There was it's a strange one. So Sky Sports were there with Will. So Will Greenwood was the headline act. So he went last. Didn't see. Robinson, the commentator.
Oh, he was
so Ian Robertson.
Yeah. Robertson, yeah, he had some good stories. He was good.
There was who else was there? Someone
Paul
else?
Williams was there.
Oh yes, do they even do that podcast now?
I don't think they do. No
idea.
Under the Sticks.
Yeah. No idea.
That's right. Paul Williams and that journalist who I didn't particularly like from. What's his name?
I can't remember. But God. I know the one. Yeah.
All these insignificant Twitter
personalities.
Andy McGeady.
Andy
McGeady.
That's right.
They love their rugby.
Well, yes, they like their rugby. I guess there's that. Yeah, that was very strange. So the Will Greenwood podcast was so awkward and silent. People just wanted to laugh to break the awkwardness.
It was one of World Cup. He can do what he wants.
That's exactly what he was doing.
He was talking about the story to winning a World Cup, but not talking about the happiness, talking about how hard it was,
and how depressing and miserable
and like how sad it...
I just miss Will Greenwood doing rowing fitness sessions and then recording how knackered he is at the end, like he's on some
party drug. A listener emailed us saying, "Is he on mind altering party drugs?" I'm like, I think he might be.
Well, I'd love to have Will Greenwood.
I love his dad though. What a guy.
I mean, they're both amazing guys.
Yeah, they are, yeah. To be fair. When Will Greenwood first started doing commentary, I thought he was absolute best.
He was a game changer.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right.
Superb analysis. Really interesting.
I used to watch the rugby club on a Thursday night religiously after training.
Yeah. I've got a story about his dad. I'll tell it later.
Dick Greenwood. Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went around his house.
That's a good tease.
Patron pod.
Yeah. That's a good tease. So we're done with a brilliant season for Northampton so far. Again, I think one thing I did notice, and again, he's been brilliant, but you did notice the chasm between Alex Mitchell and Jameson Gibson-Park, like going from someone who's very, very good to someone who is right up there as one of the very best.
I don't know. I mean, obviously,
the speed of ball.
I thought in this game.
Do you not think that was some of the stuff Leinster got away with at the breakdown was horrendous?
I mean, it's Matthew Ray now. He's been doing that all the time. Like, Northampton would have known that's how. He lets the boys play at the breakdown.
I would say that's more to do with how smart the Leinster pack were. Yeah, just messing stuff up rather than the speed of Jameson Gibson-Park.
Maybe that's fair.
Yeah, and also, when Mitchell makes those little breaks, and when he snipes around the corner and he's right underneath the posts, he nearly gets the offload away. I mean, he has some great moments, but
he does.
The speed of ball wasn't
not critical. It's more a positive of Jameson Gibson-Park, and I think we saw it in the Harlequins Toulouse game as well. I mean, DuPont is just on another planet, and Jameson Gibson-Park is not that far behind.
Yes.
They're both fantastic.
Yeah. Gibson-Park is in the conversation for the second best nine in the world. But everyone is a million miles away from Anton DuPont.
The otherwise best nine in the world.
Yes.
He's Rafael Nadal.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
How did New Zealand let that guy go?
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
they had one of the greatest nines ever.
This is true. And his backup, TJ Perenara, who's also sensational. And he's back at the Hurricanes after a couple of years in Japan. And coming off the bench and just scoring tries for fun at the moment. I think he's their top try scorer from basically coming off the bench.
So, I guess a more pertinent question on this is not how did they let him go? Because you could let anyone go at that age, because I think he moved when he's relatively
very young. Yeah.
How did they know to pick him?
How did Ireland know?
How did Ireland... Because he didn't come with Irish...
He was a project player.
Yeah, but he didn't come with Irish ancestry.
Why him?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. They picked him to get him playing in green 3 years later.
But how do they know?
At the time, they went, "We've got Isaac Boss. We need to do something here."
But there are loads of... Yeah. When did he come over? 23? 23-year-old scrum officer. There must be loads of them who are not upset All Black standard. And we'll have that one because he'll definitely be the best in the world.
It is a great point because they can only bring him... They bring in one per position across the provinces. Yeah. So how did they know that for the next 12 years, the one is going to be this guy?
Or might it be the case that because he's in the Leinster system, a peak period where Ireland are playing fantastic rugby and have a load of great players coming through, could the next cab off the rank, if they'd have picked him, would we be saying exactly the same about that person?
Possible.
Ross Byrne. like Phil says, they can only pick one of them. It can come from anywhere in the world. They pick that guy, and I think there is an element, isn't there? The eternal question: is it like the coaching, or is it the natural talent, or is it the system you surround yourself with? Well, whatever they've done, it's pretty awesome. I'd love to be able to speak to the person that identifies the talent for Ireland for project players.
Yeah, it's great. I'll tell you what, it leads us nicely onto another game here. By way of this question and talking about Jameson Gibson-Park, who at the time was a New Zealander, if your fundamental priority, if everything you cared about was having the best possible England rugby team you could, why would you not want a player or several players to play at Toulouse?
Well, we did speak about this, didn't we, when watching the awesome... Jack Willis looks like just one of the finest back rows in the world now. And he's in one of the finest back rows in the world. I mean, what more do you want? What more do you want? So the problem with Jack Willis... Jack? Tom? Tom or Jack? No, Tom is at Saracens.
Yes.
Tom's not Jack Willis, right? The problem with Jack Willis has always been the problem is we never really knew how good he'd be because he's playing at Wasps. And Wasps were okay at times, but that's not a world-class outfit. So you'd have to roll the dice with England and give him a prolonged period of time with England to see if he's exactly who we think he is. And, you know, they never wanted to do that because they've got Curry and everything else. Well, letting him go to Toulouse is the perfect tonic to this, because we know now he's a world-class operator because he's in a world-class team and he's one of their best players. There you go, problem solved. This is exactly why we should let the players go wherever they want.
Or at least it shouldn't completely close the door. You can, if you want to take a, if you think it's not good, I don't want to pick that player. Steve Borthwick's entitled to not pick a player, but if someone absolutely demands it,
yeah,
don't close the door completely.
The term exceptional circumstances should be changed to something more pertinent.
Yeah,
because to me, an exceptional circumstance is that you are exceptional at what you do.
Yeah.
Because there's not many people who are playing the rugby that Jack Willis. I mean, there's only one. It's going to be one English qualified player to play in the Heineken Cup final. In fact, you probably assemble maybe five English players who played in the Heineken Cup finals over the last 6-7 years until Saracens were the last team to get there. So since Saracens have been there, hardly any English people have been in Heineken Cup finals.
Exeter. 3 years ago.
Exeter would be the last ones.
Yeah.
Wouldn't last all Saracens.
Exeter.
Yeah, so since Exeter.
2020. It was 2020. Yeah, yeah.
The double in 2020.
Yeah, so since Exeter.
So the last 3 years, those six teams have been, yeah.
If you win, right, here's
Leinster, La Rochelle, obviously. Oh, Jack Noel wasn't there last year.
Nope. So here's the exceptional circumstance. If you get to win a Heineken Cup, that is exceptional. You may play for England. There you go. Easy. I like that. She also incentivizes you only to join good teams and not go for the money. Or go for the money and join a good team.
I mean, I would be happy with that as well.
Yeah, it's a great rule. If you win the top 14 or you win the Champions Cup, you qualify for next year's England team. Because why would you not want that player?
I quite like it. Just because it achieves what I would like.
Yeah. Well, hang on. I think we all want the same thing here, except for Bill Sweeney.
Well, I want England to win the next World Cup. That's my starting point, and I work back from there.
I'm really sold on this idea before. I wasn't initially, but I am now. So it achieves the RFU's goal of saying, look, you can't go to France because you won't get picked, unless you win a major trophy, in which case it's a hell of a story of a player backing himself. Like, yeah, I'll go to Toulouse and I'll definitely win a trophy. I love that. And then getting back in the England team as an exceptional player. And you've got to call him the exceptional player. you made the rules.
No.
You call me the...
We should adopt the Mourinho, and he is... A special one.
Love it. But it's got to be on his shirt. So maybe underneath the badge, exceptional player exceptional. Yes.
Joueur exceptional. Francois Quarot is a joueur exceptional.
And he's a hard man, isn't he?
Antoine Dupont is the most joueur.
Wasn't his best game, though, was it? I don't think he was. He was classic Anton. He was very good.
Yeah, he was ridiculous.
Do you reckon?
He had patches where he was ridiculous. He does things no other player in the world could do.
This is true. Maybe I'm judging.
It's like he. I was thinking about this earlier.
Even if it was a bad game, he still scored two tries.
Because the superpower he had. Well, one of many superpowers, but the superpower that he had in this game was. Do you remember X-Men? Nightcrawler could just transport. Teleport instantly to anywhere. That's Antoine Dupont. How the hell did you just get there?
He does do some crazy things. I thought by his own standards, it wasn't his most... He was good, don't get me wrong. But by his own standards, it wasn't his most exceptional game. That probably says more about him than anything else. I was quite astonished that they played Kinghorn over Ramos.
Good call, eh?
Which they have done... They did it in the... quarterfinals.
Did it in the quarterfinals. The last week in the top 14, or the last top 14 games, they played Kinghorn on the wing and Ramos at fullback.
If I was assembling a World 15 or my World 15, what's the point? I would start Ramos. So the fact that Kinghorn's starting is amazing.
He's a very good player, is Kinghorn.
He enables you to pick any 10 you like as well, because his goal kicking's so good.
Yeah, exactly. Also, you pointed this out, and I think you were right, Tim, because you saw the game before we watched it together. Are you impressed with that, the young lad Costas?
Paul Costas.
Yeah. I mean, I've only seen him this season, and really impressed. Because he's not the biggest guy.
No.
He hits hard. He carries hard. Great balance runner.
I really like him. He's from the bloody academy as well.
Mm.
So I was looking, where they bought this guy from? No, academy.
Because it wasn't so long ago. You go, oh, it's Donty and Fiku. They've not really, they don't really have much depth at centre. That could be a problem position. No, Gaëtan, Depailler, and now Cost.
Yeah, they've got loads of depth.
Yeah. He's only 21 as well.
Yeah.
Cost.
He looks really, really good.
Mm. Yeah. Back to Harlequins. Well, we've not spoken about Harlequins, so let's talk about Harlequins.
Two Harlequins.
They are really, really good up front. For all of the Marcus Smith nonsense and all of the talk about the backs, which are all good and they play nice explosive rugby, their up front work is really, really solid. They win scrums, they win scrum penalties.
That Will Evans try.
Yeah.
The pushover try was just complete dominance.
Yeah, they got a maul try. Before the first try, Finn Baxter won the penalty that set that in motion against Older Geary, having put Ben Tamafuna in his pocket. Yeah, they do a lot of basics very well. And Will Evans at the breakdown is a menace.
And they hold the ball. That's the most important thing. They hold the ball.
Lavis and Herbs just hit rucks and hit people all day.
Yep. Yeah.
They are a bit... So the knock on them is that they're a bit fickle. Maybe they are in defence, to be fair. Maybe that's maybe why they don't spend as much time as they need to. But going forward, their basic nuts and bolts forward play is really, really good. And they don't get near... So actually, same with Northampton. Northampton don't get nearly enough.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
Credit.
That's been a transformation of Northampton this season.
Because I think for the longest time, Northampton's had the better of the Leinster's pack, particularly in the scrum, first 20, 30 minutes. Leinster did do better towards the end.
I think the scrum's strength of Leinster came through towards the end.
Yeah, but you look at those two teams on paper, you don't expect Trevor Davidson and Ethan Waller to really bother the Irish front row.
Not the all-international front row.
Yeah, but they did really, really well. So that'd be the first thing I'd say about Harlequins. They will be... And actually, this is across both teams, so disappointed with some of the tries that they conceded. So the last try Malia scored, they will be gutted about that. And I think Northampton...
That was just when Jack Walker had gone off, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the play after, the kick for the corner and then scoring the opposite one.
But I think the most disappointing thing about that is the two players coming across. I mean, maybe not Green, but certainly Liner is a super physical bloke. I would back him in that situation to make a tackle.
Yeah.
And he got bounced.
That was too soft, wasn't it?
Oh, but nowhere near as soft as the tries that Northampton gave up to James Lowe.
James Lowe. Mm.
The third try James Lowe scored was good. The first two were completely unacceptable.
But that was because there was so much pressure through the middle that Northampton kind of squeezed in and then one little pop pass and spread it wide and walk in for James Lowe.
I tell you a phenomenon that I really like. Do you know when you're watching a team hammer away at the line and they're using their forwards and it's like this sort of trench warfare and it's pick and go, pick and go. Everyone's aggression is up and they're ready for these massive collisions, and then Marcus Smith scores. Or that change of pace, that change
actually,
of play.
That's one. If you're talking about soft tries, that Marcus Smith try, the first Quinn's try, there were three defenders on him and they all just kind of said, "Your man." They all thought one of the other ones
he's not the problem
was getting it. Yeah.
Well, I think they're so G'd up, aren't they, to hit big men and have this massive confidence. No one missed Marcus Smith because he didn't fancy it.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't that. They just all thought the other one was going to make the tackle. Yeah. Oh, this is an easy tackle. 3 metres from the line, just tackle Marcus Smith.
What happens?
No one does it.
Then Green does a similar one later on.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's just because they're expecting the physicality and all of a sudden you've got these little dancing feet.
Yeah.
Awful stuff.
Green Line was a lovely line, actually.
Yeah, he's playing brilliant rugby at the minute.
There's a lot of the Quincy, but particularly the back line, are playing really good rugby. Mm.
I think, and just to move on a tiny bit, one of the problems with the two English teams that we're seeing at the moment, and I think this is going to be a problem for the Premiership going forward, is if they don't win, it's very hard for the fans to get excited for next season. So if Leinster didn't win, they go, do you know what? It's okay, Geordie Barrett's coming in. You know, we're going to build, we're going to be a bit better. Nien Arbor's
yeah,
in.
Yeah, another year of Nien Arbor.
You know the projection of that team could get better and better and better. Same with Toulouse. With the English teams, if you don't win, it is depressing because you know your team, if you're good, is about to be dismantled.
I'm going to challenge you on that one because in true, almost like, without being too unkind, it's almost like the Scottish national team. I had no expectation of an actual victory and the Premiership teams did way better than I imagined they would do.
Yeah, but I think...
So they can be gallant losers on this one.
Yeah, but if you're a fan, you're like, oh, all right, and next year we're going to have to do this all again, but we're going to have to... So if you're a Premiership fan, you're always in this perpetual state of rebuilding. So Northampton will be losing Laws and...
Ludlam
and a few others. Harlequins will be losing.
Esther Hazen.
Yeah. Liner. What's his name? The prop.
Oh, yeah. Will Collier.
Will Collier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this happens every year now because of the salary cap. And if you're any good, by definition, your players are then going to be wanted and they might be leaving the league. They might be into France. So you've always got this this fear that, Christ, that was really good fun, but next year we're not going to be able to do this again, or we're going to have to rebuild it. It's going to be someone else's year.
Well, I'm
still in favour of it, but yeah, that's just the...
Just to make the point, but players leave clubs every year. It's not that there is a race to the bottom, perpetual decline in Premiership clubs. And actually, this season has demonstrated that I think... I'm happy to put my hands up and say that I was wrong about how far the Premiership was from the other leagues.
Yeah.
Part of that is the three clubs going bust and... boosting those players.
We'll have to wait and see exactly how good the Premiership clubs are after all of these, random players, these additional players from the three other clubs wash their way through the system.
Mm.
Then we'll understand exactly how good these clubs are. But yeah, the danger is, if you don't win on the year that you're supposed to win, just like in the NFL, it's exactly the same as the NFL. NFL always say, we are designed to win now. And if we don't win now, we're rebuilding. So you're either rebuilding or you're winning now. And if you don't win now, it's difficult. And it's going to be hard to win now if you've got people like Leinster and Toulouse are continuously building. And the difference between players leaving clubs in the salary cap system and leaving clubs in the French system, well, maybe
which
not French it, system.
Yeah, French does have a salary cap, but it's just much bigger.
Yeah, is that the players you lose tend to be the ones that are really valuable. You're not just getting rid of kids. You're not getting rid of guys that haven't made it. You get rid of guys that have made it, but you just can't afford to keep them.
So next year, is it next year? The Premiership salary cap goes up to 6.4. There's also talk of that the PGP, Professional Game Agreement, it's got to be agreed in the next few months. It's in the Rugby paper today, actually.
Yeah, but just reading between the lines and trying to summarise it, what the RFU and the RFU, let's just remember, are responsible for the game across the board in England. Mm-hmm. All from what I can gather, and tell me if this is as you understand it from what you've read and seen, Phil, but what the RFU, along with Premiership Rugby, are saying that has been agreed is the level of funding for Premiership clubs. They haven't said anything about the Championship. They haven't said anything about anything outside of just simply how much cash are we giving you Premiership clubs?
Yeah, I don't even know if that is formally agreed. Like, because it's one of those where until it's all agreed, nothing's agreed. Like you don't really with deals like this.
Like they haven't sorted promotion relegation. I would say you need to pick a horse and back it. And the RFU should be saying, we're not talking about how much money you're getting until you guarantee this. We want promotion if that's what they want. And it has to be there.
But if
they don't want it, then say they don't want it. But they're not. They're just saying, we've agreed it. We're not going to tell you any of the exact stuff. And we'll sort out all the other things like promotion, relegation, like the Championship later. Which says to me, you haven't sorted the deal out.
Because I think the deal is not sorted. I think it will be... I don't know what the stance will be on promotion relegation.
But they need to say what it is.
Yeah.
Because the silence is deafening at the minute.
Yeah. it's not. I mean, it's not like the RFU to be.
Well, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
They are interested in the men's game insofar as it produces the England players, and the England players are what powers the entire construct.
Yeah. The England men's players.
Yeah.
Great. Let me just say again. Huge amount of money.
Well spotted, Tim. The England men's players, right? Not the women's team. They are a cost. No, they're the most important investment opportunity the game's ever seen. Anyway, one of those two things is true, and I'm not sure which one. Now, the other strand that they're interested in is, of course, the women's team. And the reason they're interested in women's rugby is because it's an easy win on paper to boost participation. You can easily game the women's system, so you can go and win a tournament or be close to winning a tournament.
Let's have a bit of balance. So the women's game is growing rapidly, and that's a good thing.
Yes, of course it is.
It's a fantastic thing, genuinely.
Yeah.
There's, mm-hmm. That is great.
But the danger, the problem then becomes they neglect other areas of the game because, look, our overall players are growing because we've got more women in the game. But that doesn't really help if you're a men's player at all, really, mm-hmm. or if you're a championship player. And so the amount of money that's disappeared from the championship is almost exactly the same that has gone to the women's game. Almost. Almost. Now, you know, it's it's a tricky one. So those are two areas that they're interested in. It's professional women's game and it's the professional men's game. And everything else they're not too bothered about. And the problem with the RFU, of course, is that its job is to be both a professional sort of a professional team and also the regulator of or the, what do you call it, like the custodian of the grassroots game. I'm not sure those two things work together.
Mm. We should get back to the rugby.
Yep.
Before we do... I was just looking up Jameson Gibson-Park to see whether he played for New Zealand under-20s. He did not play for New Zealand under-20s. The year that he was eligible, 2012, he didn't get picked. Do you want to know the two scrum halves who did get picked?
2012. Piriwipu.
Oh no, he was way before that. He played in 2011 World Cup.
He played in the 2011 World Cup. That was the last. That's when he retired after that.
Was it Aaron? Yeah.
Who, sorry?
Aaron.
No. I think he's slightly older than that.
Okay. So Jimmy Cowan?
He's older. Yeah, different era again. So these are guys who would be 32 now.
Okay.
For context, 31, 32 now, as Jameson Gibson-Park is.
Oh, no, because he played for England. I was going to say so, Willie Hines.
No.
That would be a great shout.
That's a good shout. No, so neither of these guys have played internationally.
Andy Ellis.
No.
He did play internationally.
So, one played all his career in New Zealand. Blues and Crusaders were his two teams. You will recognise the name, but you probably won't get it. That's Bryn Hall.
No, would not have got that in a million years. Nope.
The other one played Premiership. He played, I'll give his clubs, he played Leicester Tigers from 2015 to 2017, Worcester Warriors in 2017, Harlequins 27 to 2018, and then back to Worcester 2019 to 2021.
Huh?
So...
Huh. You must be a Highlanders boy.
You will know the name.
He's a Highlanders boy, but who is he?
Where did he play?
He must be Highlanders.
He never played top level. He played Bay of Plenty and Northland and Canterbury. So he not played top level in New Zealand.
This has thrown me completely now.
Born in Christchurch.
Huh? That's not going to help.
So yeah, he played for Tigers, Worcester and Harlequin. Two stints at Worcester. I think he was most famous for playing at Tigers, or most known for playing at Tigers in 15 to 17.
50? Christ, how do I not know this? I'm astonished I don't know this.
You will kick yourself.
Have you got any ideas, Tim?
No, I haven't got the foggiest.
I'm trying to think of people that would throw the ball to Toby Flood, because that would be roughly when he was there, right?
15 maybe towards the end, but... who would have been the
five? Oh, no. That he was the local lad. I'm looking now. I'm trying to find names. Johnny R, he was a local lad, though. But,
Johnny R, yeah, financial advisor now. Oh, actually, Beardmore & Co. Independent Financial Advisors. There you go. Just thought I'd put in a little shout out there.
What about Quite Right?
I have absolutely no idea. It's really bugging me. Harlequins as well. Did he have much game time?
He had a bit. You've definitely heard of him. Definitely heard of him.
I have no idea.
Luke Baldwin. He's a local lad as local well. Just looking at Worcester Warriors 2017. I haven't got a clue, mate. Who is it? Put us out of our misery.
Jonathan Mark Kitto. Jono Kitto.
Oh, Kitto.
Jono Kitto.
Jono Kitto.
I wouldn't have got that for a long,
so,
long time.
Bryn Hall and Jono Kitto kept the second best nine in the world out of the New Zealand under-20s team
Jono 10, Kitto.
12 Christ. Years ago.
Wow. Well.
Just while we're doing little shout-outs, if you are the father of a strapping 16-year-old lad who maybe is doing his GCSEs at the moment in the South Manchester area, and you want to join the best rugby team in Manchester, not an opinion, a fact, because it's the home of the Lancashire Cup winners. It's the best team in the county.
Oh, for that age group?
For that age group.
Yes, absolutely right.
Then please, next season, bring your lad along. Not only will he be playing for a team that gets mentioned on this podcast all the time, he'll play with some outstanding players.
And there's money involved, right?
Be coached and loads of good times. Come to Broughton Park. No, we're in a situation now. And
yeah, tell us the situation, actually. Tim.
So the situation, because you'll both remember playing Colts rugby.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. You know, I imagine if you're listening, you probably played Colts rugby. We have just won the Lancashire Cup, or my son's team that I coach, just won the Lancashire Cup under-16s. Played our last game today, beat Sandbach. And then we sat down as a coaching group and had a chat about what we do next year. And the obvious thought is, well, we just won the Lancashire Cup. Let's roll on, do under-17s. See how we can go when it's the whole of the North West, Cheshire and Cumbria as well. Let's see how we get on. Only everybody is saying to me, if you want to make an under-17 team work, you need 28 lads minimum.
So you're only about eight lads off.
Yeah, well, we started the season with about 28. Some of them were rugby league, and they're not going to do both next year because it get, you know, A levels and all that stuff kicks in. So we're like, we'll forget about the league guys. If we get them, then great. But we'll assume they're not coming. And a couple more are going off to do different things. One's joining the military, which I'm gutted about. He's like, he's an amazing player.
But you'll sleep safe at night knowing that he's protecting. Set in the country.
Well, yeah, the attack of all of the teams in the northwest of England will be delighted.
Not your fly half.
No. Second row. Anyway, so we're going to be as it stands, we're about 20, which I was sort of thinking, oh, that's good, we've got 20 lads. But they're like, no, you won't. If you have 20 lads starting the season, you won't finish the season.
No, of course you won't.
You need,
but build it, and they will come, Tim. So if you have an under-17s side and you can just keep those numbers sustainable and let everyone else know about it, there'll be other people who will not have under-17s sides, and you'll pick up those players too. You know, just build it and see what happens. Make sure people know about it, and if you get some more players, great.
Broughton Park Rugby Club. Contact headchasers@gmail.com.
Never mind. I'm going to say something horrible about Broughton Park, but I won't. It's a great club.
It's a great rugby team.
The clubhouse is a little bit like an airport waiting room lounge.
I like it.
You don't like it.
I like that stat. The first team pitch setup is amazing at
it's
Broughton
not.
Park. For that level, it's great. With the elevated stand, it's awesome. Oh, it's like we get to drink at altitude at Broughton Park. I know how much you like that.
It's undeniable. Yeah, no, I've always disliked that. I always liked my time there, but I hated that clubhouse because it's just so cold and unfriendly.
Well, do you know what? It's a great place when you're watching the best team in Lancashire.
Yeah, tell you what, the coldness is somewhat alleviated when you're winning.
Did either of you watch the ECC semi-finals, as in Challenge Cup?
I was across the road. I could have probably, if the wind was blowing the right way, heard the Sharks winning that dramatic
home at the Stoop.
In Twickenham.
Their home ground is a fortress, isn't it? Fair
way. never been beaten at their home ground. Yeah.
Now, do we all agree that the Sharks are very irresponsible for taking this competition seriously. Do we all agree? Well, they should have thrown this game and concentrated on the top 14, right?
Well, URC. Well, let's just have a look at the table. They've only won four games all season in the URC.
Have they?
Yeah.
That team that
with a front row of Oxenchay, Bongi and Mbanambi and Vincent Cock.
even Etzebeth sitting behind them.
To be fair,
they've won four games.
They were terrible. And I mean this, so I don't mean obviously they were better than Claremont by 1 point, and they played some all right rugby. When I say they were terrible considering the players on the field. So I was kind of just watching, and the commentator said, Etzebeth's like, Etzebeth's playing? And I just looked at the team sheet, completely anonymous for like, the most part. And then I was like, that's Mbanambi. That's Oxenchay. Like, you start realising who all these boys are, and they were not good. They were not playing to the level that you'd expect those lads to play. Now, in the end, it was enough. But, I can't see why they'd only win four games. But if they weren't playing those lads, then, yeah, I could see why they only won four games.
They've only won, in the URC, they've won three of their last four. So they only won one game in the opening 13
matches. What has gone on there, then?
I know.
They just not play their best players? Or?
Hangover from the World Cup.
We'll put it down to that. But hey, they've got Andre Esterhazen going there next year and a couple of other big names going there. But yeah, fantastic ending.
Yeah, Esterhazen and Lucanio Arm is quite a handy centre partnership, isn't it?
Well, there was that Sia Masuku, there's a lot of talk about him. He's had four Man of the Match.
Fly Half, is it?
Yeah, Fly Half. Four Man of the Match awards.
Kicking was superb.
Was good.
And he's had four Man of the Match awards in a row, and he set that move for the Mapimpi try.
Yeah, that was ace. Because that was the game-winning try. Game-winning try and a very tough game-winning conversion. Fair play to him.
Mm.
Yeah, they. So first half, they didn't do well with Claremont's physicality. But I'd go further and say Claremont battered them.
Mm.
Like, it was an impressive beatdown. I'm surprised that they got back into the game. Now, during the game itself, Benjamin Kayser was he was commentating, and he came out with some stats which he kept on repeating in comms over and over again, but nevertheless it's a good one. The rugby match has lasted 70 minutes, Claremont would be like top three or something.
Really?
And then lo and behold, they collapsed in the last 10.
See, I was watching this mostly without sound, so I missed that.
Yeah.
But they did collapse in the last 10.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So they didn't look too bad, Claremont. I've not seen anything of them all yet.
Team with Pathelo Yato and Marcos Kremer and flankers.
Yeah. And Fritz Lee was a boy that I thought played
and
well.
And Soakulu coming off the bench, who was ace. I can't remember who they beat. Ulster when they smashed
that.
Ulster.
I didn't see the full bit of this game, but recently when I've seen him, I love the scrum halves, you know.
Yeah. I didn't see enough of him to like say if he's good or bad or whatnot, but...
And the wing, Joris Jurand, who scored the two tries, he looked ace as well. And he's, I think they said in comms, he's only playing because of an injury to Alvaretti Raka.
Mm.
So,
is he still playing there?
He is.
Yeah. Is he still good?
Claremont are 10th in the top 14.
Mm.
So maybe not. Joris Jurand, I assume... Because I'd never heard of him, and I assumed he was a young lad. Nope, 29.
Yeah,
right. Raka, I think Raka got a hat trick last week, beating a pumped Stade Francais. Top
did
of the
they?
Table.
Yeah. Hmm. So yeah, I know nothing about Claremont whatsoever. The season, they're all quite physical. The Sharks have loads of good players who played themselves.
Yeah,
but ultimately won.
Well, what's pretty cool about the final is both teams, Gloucester. We can come on to them. Gloucester and the Sharks are both languishing right near the bottom of their domestic league. And this game will get them into the Champions Cup at the expense of one of the teams above them.
Well, you know, let's just say we knew the result of the season. It's all, but we didn't put team names attached to it. Gloucester having two trophies at the end of the season is... I mean, for what they've done in the league, is quite impressive. But they're not that bad. Just the league is very competitive.
Yeah, they haven't been great this year, though.
They haven't.
But
imagine if they win two trophies. Is that a successful year?
You can't count the Premiership Cup as a trophy.
I don't know.
Steve Diamond did.
Yeah.
But you can't.
I would be surprised if they win two trophies. I think they won't be able to match the Sharks up front. If the Sharks do decide to play for more than just the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it does seem unlikely, doesn't it?
Well, they're closer to their home stadium than Gloucester.
It's more
a home game for the Sharks.
West London to North London.
Where is the game being held?
Tottenham.
Well, both games have been held.
That'll be on Friday night.
Are we going to both games, Phil?
We're not. We're going to...
Leinster to Toulouse.
Oh, when are we going?
Saturday.
Oh, well, this Saturday?
Wait, 25th of May. Friday the 24th of May is the Sharks v Gloucester.
Oh, Christ, I've got 2 days in London followed by another day in London.
So you've got 2 days in London, back to Manchester then, which is basically what I do a lot of the time.
Stay in London.
Why don't I stay in London? That's a great shout. Why don't I stay in London?
Stay in London.
Get an Airbnb for 4 days.
That's a great idea. Right.
Get a search radius of like half a kilometre from...
Grindr. Oh, sorry, what?
from a CrossFit box.
Yes. I quite like that idea. I like that idea. I do like that idea. 4 days of drop-ins in someone else's box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some CrossFit.
Hey!
So Sharks won. Gloucester obviously won.
Zach Mercer won.
Zach Mercer. Benetton. I wanted Benetton to win. I like the underdogs. And with the disallowed try in late first half, and then they scored three tries in that second half. I thought they had a chance, but the Hastings crash over, and then the Freddie Clark intercept just kind of put it to bed.
His highlight. If you just took Freddie Clark's highlight reel and just gave that to someone, they'll go, I'll pay him £1 million a year.
Yeah, he's very good. He's good.
His ash splash finish, yeah, which did feel... I can understand why he was happy, because he's just booked himself a final at the Spurs Stadium. I did feel the ash splash was a bit unnecessary. It's a bit too showboaty. For your poor beloved Benetton Treviso, JB.
Yeah, Benetton. Of course. I'm a huge, huge fan of Benetton. How did I forget that? So next week is Premiership. Who have we got?
Before we go there, can I just apologise, Alex? Let me explain why I'm nursing this.
Yes, please.
Oh, yes.
And also why I'm looking at my phone constantly.
Oh, I know.
You have this ahead of you. What?
I know what you're going to say, because you gave us a heads up. There's a shindig going
there's,
down.
There's currently about 50 or 60 teenagers at my house. Wow. And I was in the office earlier doing a bit of work, and I said to Louis, my son, who basically, he'd said to me weeks ago, if we win the Lancashire Cup final, when they got into the... Apparently our house is a good party house. Louis had a party there before. Connie's had a party there before. And they're always told, it's a good party house. Can you have another party? Anyway, he basically said to me after we won the semi-final, if we win the final, can I have a party?
And at this point, you were massively backing Waterloo, yeah?
Yeah,
a bit of time. I was like, never beat Waterloo, yeah, have it.
No, you're like Mark Regan supporting. I was supporting South Africa.
I was high on the adrenaline of beating Fylde in the semi-final. So yeah, you can have it, absolutely. Anyway, we're about 2 minutes after the final whistle. Yeah, celebrations, everyone's hugging. We're having that party next weekend.
It's good thing you can do.
They'd obviously been talking about it as
and
a
then
squad.
Today when they were bringing in like strippers in boxes.
Well, so I was in the office and I could hear. So they were putting everything in the front room, like all the drinks cabinet, all of the stuff that could be broken is all going in the front room. That door's getting shut, and then I could hear like shuffling of feet up and downstairs, and I could hear a very familiar sound, the sound of clanking bottles. So I'm sat here, ignorance is bliss, and I'm just going, well, no news is good news. It's 10 o'clock, and...
But it doesn't describe why you've had half a beer.
Well, because I've had a few today already.
Okay.
And I don't want to... I need to be able to go and smooth
you might
things.
Need to drive.
So if I turn up back at the house... Because the neighbours are kicking off, and I'm like, I'll sort this out.
Right. Something happens, right? Because kids can, accidents happen, right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully nothing serious. But if you need to drive somewhere, right, for whatever reason it is, and you got to explain to the other parents that you were too hammered to drive. That's not a great look, is it? Rugby coach too hammered to drive as under-16s trash neighbourhood in the MEN.
Well, the other element, and let me just say this, because Phil won't know this, I've let JB on it. As I walked around through Chorlton today, and this is maybe one of the most Chorlton things that's ever happened, on my road, as you cross the road, go past the primary school, what was the co-op funeral care building now been commandeered by a load of hippies in who've brought their vans and have parked them, and they've turned it into like a rave.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. It was for the last couple of days. There's just been more and more vans arriving.
A rave in a morgue.
Yes. And my neighbours went round to it last night and said, it was great, it was banging, it was bouncing. Well, it's just a free week ago there now, if you want.
Well, when the local branch of HSBC closed down, they set up a feminist art camp in there.
Yeah, so in Chorlton we have a vegan deli.
Yeah.
We have a cooperative, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We have a vegan cooperative and... Yep. And yeah, we have a community art space where a bank once stood.
Yes, that's exactly right. And nothing says downfall of capitalism more than having the feminist art gallery in a bank.
We were once a serious country, weren't we?
Yeah, once upon a time we used to make things, but no, not anymore. And they ended up having to dish out leaflets around the local community saying, we are sorry for partying too hard late at night. It's like, well, why didn't you invite me? I haven't gone there. I haven't gone to your bloody feminist
art
show.
Don't apologise. Give us flyers telling us when it's happening.
When are the girls staying up late in the art gallery? When?
So if you fancy strolling around to see what's going on at the rave round the corner.
Yeah, I'm keen for that.
I mean, I'm curious to see what's going on. But as much as anything, I thought that's my backup plan. If I need to turf teenagers out, I just go, there's a rave down the road. Yeah. Off you go.
Hey, well, from Manchester Stories, it's not really a funny one. It's a strange one. And I tell you, the rugby game that's been played at the time. So the rugby game been played at the time was Australia beating England at home in their home World Cup.
I was at that game.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So I was in Manchester, and I was out with a friend of mine who'd come up for the Conservative Party Conference, because the Conservative Party Conference was at the same day as the World Cup. So there's loads of anti-Conservative protests going on at night. This must be like September-ish, maybe November. November?
It was.
But it was freezing cold. Like, when I say freezing cold, it was like -2 or -3. It was one of the coldest nights I can remember. It was also like the height of the spice epidemic too.
Oh, yeah.
So we went for a wander up to Piccadilly Gardens, and you've never seen anything like it. Like, it was horrific. I was embarrassed of the city.
It's like a zombie film.
Yeah, it was.
I wasn't there, but I saw the spice endemic epidemic.
Yeah. So you had this rave in the middle of Piccadilly Gardens, but then you had people passed out, not drunk passed out, like the sort of passed out you'd only know if you've seen Spice in action multiple times. But they were just, they only had t-shirts on, and most of them had no shoes and socks on. I was like, they're going to die. There's no way you can possibly survive a night on the street at -4 like that. And there was tens of them. They were everywhere, and they'd all descended on Manchester to rave. Because nothing deposes a Conservative government more than a rave in Piccadilly Gardens. But that's what they've come to do. And presumably die at night.
We've got a rave in Chorlton.
Yeah.
But next week we're back to Premiership, aren't we?
We are.
Massive Prem games.
There's 2 weeks left of Prem.
Absolutely huge.
So we've got Friday the 10th of May. We have...
Tigers Sale?
Yeah, Sale host Tigers. And Newcastle host Bath.
So Bath win.
Bath 5-point win.
Which puts them on how many points?
Oh, let me get it up.
Current standings are... I've got it here. Northampton are on 55 points. Saracens on 51. Bath 50. Bristol 49. Harlequins also 49. And Sale 47.
I think Sale will shade the game against...
So Bath are going to be level with Northampton
Yes.
If you discount at the end of Friday night. At the end of Friday night, yeah.
Yes.
You would imagine.
Yes. Highly likely that they will. Sale to Leicester are out of it. Exeter have a long shot. They're on 45 points as well. You'd assume Sale are going to win that at home.
Yeah.
Maybe a 4-point win for Sale. Then on Saturday, we have the two semi-finalists, or two of the semi-finalists.
Absolutely furious.
You seem to have a lot of fluid in your belly button hair there, JB.
Furious.
It has been known.
So we've got Northampton host Gloucester, which you would assume is going to be a home win.
So that puts Northampton
on 59 or 60 points.
And in the playoffs, potentially guaranteeing a home tie.
Home semi-final, depending on the other results, yeah. So the other results are interesting. The other games are interesting. The results will be very interesting. Bristol hosts Saracens in the 5-past-3 televised kickoff.
Huge.
Both these teams have to win.
Yeah.
They really do. Saracens, if they win away at Bristol, they get to leapfrog Bath into second place, and it will help them move a step closer to securing a home semi-final. Bristol, if they win, because they are the form team in the Premiership at the moment, they are at home, they could leapfrog Saracens and go, potentially line up a semi-final against Bath if Bristol win. And then Exeter Chiefs host Harlequins.
Yeah.
So Chiefs have to win. If anything other than a 5-point win, and they are definitely out. 5-point win will make the last weekend interesting. But Harlequins, for them as well, pretty much anything other than a win. And Harlequins are out.
It's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Oof. What semi-finals would you like to watch? If you could just wave a wand and just for pure entertainment or satisfaction, just wait, what semi-finals would you like to see?
I would like Northampton, Harlequins, Saracens.
So I'd actually like to see Bristol in there. I'd like to see Bath, Bristol and Northampton, Harlequins. Bath, Bristol, the rivalry.
Mm. Do you know what I'd like? I'd like Bath, Bristol. There's a lot of things I'd like, but Bath, Bristol as a semi-final does sound really good.
Mm.
And I'd also like Northampton at home against Saracens, because so often Northampton are going, oh, we made the playoffs, walloped by Saracens.
Yeah.
It would kind of be poetic if they did face Saracens, and then, well, go on then, go and reverse that.
Mm.
Oh, I'd love the final to be Saracens-Harlequins. I would love that final.
That would be a good final.
Yeah. Let's see what Harlequins are really made of.
We're not mentioning Sale at this point.
I don't think Sale are likely to get in there.
So Sale play Tigers, which they should win. They then travel to Saracens in the last game.
So Sale win, and arguably Sale win their last two games, they're in the top four. I think it's not an unreasonable shout, that.
Yeah, but they've got to rely on other results too.
They do,
but with other teams playing each other as well. Like Bristol have got to beat Saracens and Harlequins. So there's a very real chance of Bristol, having had this amazing run and earning the right to be in the top four, which they currently sit, not making it because they lose the last two games.
If Sale do get in the playoffs, I don't think they will. If they do get in the playoffs, they'll be formidable because they're completely different to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think they're going to make it.
I don't think Sale... I don't think they will. I think they'll beat Leicester Tigers. I think they'll lose away at Saracens.
Do you know, again, if Leicester wanted to find a bit of meaning out of their last two games to try and raise it and not just let the season fritter away, because they've got great players, they need to finish seventh otherwise, if they want to play in the Champions Cup next year.
If you want to guarantee it. Yeah.
Guarantee it, because Gloucester could pinch their spot.
Yeah. It does seem a shame having maybe the best fly half in the world and not playing Champions Cup. It seems like a waste.
Isn't it? Yeah, I hope that, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so that would be my ideal final. Would be Saracens, hot. No. So I want Northampton to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I want Northampton to win it.
So Northampton have to be in the final. Whoever they play, I don't care.
Just Northampton to win it.
Now, this is a really important point, and I don't think it's maybe for us to decide it. Let's throw it open to the general population. We were watching the highlights of Leinster versus Northampton. And Tim, what did you say about Northampton's badge?
I said, and I'm looking now at a table with all of the badges next to it, and I think Northampton Saints have a club badge which now, in 2024, looks totally out of date and looks, I think I used the word village.
You did say
you
village.
You did use the word village.
And I could not agree more. Less. I could not agree less. I think it is absolutely timeless, and all those naff, awful designs that the other teams have used are going to age dreadfully, except for Northampton's, which apparently they're going to change.
Well, there's been some talk about it changing because they recognise, as I do, that it looks completely out of date right now.
It's, well, how can it be out of date if it's timeless?
It looks great on a blazer. It looks great on a club tie. It does not look good on a Premiership table.
It looks great on a table.
It does not look good on the internet.
Oh, it looks amazing. It looks amazing. All these things look absolutely astonishingly good. Because it's history, isn't it? It's your club identity. And all these people that want to just jump on the bandwagon of calling themselves Bears or, you know, like, do you remember the horrific debacle of Leicester Tigers' T sign for Topps Tiles? I mean, you don't play with your history. That's what I would say, and you should embrace it. Phil?
I am more on your side, JB, on this. Bath is another one. So I'm looking here. This is a handy little image. This is an image of past and present, old and new, all of the club crests.
So Harlequins have got it nailed.
Harlequins is very similar.
Yeah.
Bath is very similar. It's been modernised. Northampton Saints is almost identical. And London Irish, God rest their soul, was very similar. All the rest have totally changed. Like Gloucester going from a magnificent old crest with...
It's such a nice old crest, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
What more do you need to know about
two lions, there's some armour... There's some swords.
I think it should be that
swords,
old,
Tim. Swords.
That old crest should be on the blazers that the players should wear after a game.
Why can't they be on the playing kit?
The players, well, just little things. So I would have standards. So I both agree with you and completely disagree. So the players now, when they finish a game, they put tracksuit bottoms on and a polo t-shirt and that's it. They're done. Off they go.
Yeah.
They should be wearing a blazer.
100%.
They should be wearing a shirt and tie. Mm-hmm. And on that tie and on that blazer should be the traditional club crest. Because the internet has changed things, mate. The internet has completely changed.
What has changed on the internet?
Digital branding, marketing. It just doesn't look good. I don't think it looks good anyway. But tell me if you agree or disagree. Contact edchasers@gmail.com.
Do you want to dress up like a teenage boy or like a statesman? Like an elder statesman.
Well, I would do both.
When it's teenage statesman.
I would do both when it's appropriate to do each one. Do one thing well. Be a great modern athlete in a modern rugby team and then go and be an amazing...
Oh, just like,
go and be an amazing ambassador for the sport in the bar in your piped coloured blazer.
So, yeah, I mean... It's those little things. So when we spoke about Gordon League the other day, which I had no idea about, but then I found out they wore a sash on their shirt because it represents General Gordon. That's so cool. I mean, what are they going to do? Like a cartoon version of General Gordon? Like an anime General Gordon? Like, where does this end?
I'm like, just looking at all the shirts around the... So what crest do you like?
Aylesbury. Love it. Look at that. There's a duck in the middle of it. That's amazing. The Royal Air Force has got it on lockdown.
Right, the British. Okay, so the one thing I would say is like a bit of a hybrid of the two. The lion, the British and Irish Lions crest.
You wouldn't want to change that, would you?
No, that's what I'm saying. That is traditional, but it still looks simple and really good as it is.
I like that one up there, Bayonne Bombers.
Bayonne Bombers is a
cool.
So you can
cool
have a modern
Bayonne
crest.
Bombers. That's cool.
I think the point is you have a modern crest or you can have an old fashioned crest, but you stick with your crest, right? So.
But then nothing would ever change.
Good. Good. You've got to think very carefully.
What would Sail Shark's crest be if they didn't change?
The Sail one is awful.
Well, the new one or the old one?
Both.
The old one with the haystack.
Yeah, but it's just pretty village. It's just got a haystack. It's just a blue shield with a haystack in the middle.
Dreadful.
I quite like
insufficient detail.
But the ones which are like the old Leicester Tiger ones, is the old Leicester Tiger's crest is stunning. Absolutely stunning. What do they call that? Is it something? There's a word for it, isn't there? Oh, I can't remember. It's something. Never mind.
So I like the Japan's one. I really like.
Yeah, England's. I mean,
I like the Georgia one. That is a simple kind of modern design.
Yeah,
that is cool.
Well, think about the English rose. I mean, it's been through various iterations. But it's not a cool logo as such, is it? But it is English, the English logo. And therefore, it is cool because of what it means and what it represents. But it's not... I mean, if you're starting from scratch, you would never come up with that. A bloody rose.
No.
But it's cool.
So and the one starting from scratch, I'm looking at Jaguares. I love the Jaguares shirt.
Jaguares is really cool. I was thinking about that
is cool.
It's pretty neat.
You know, so it's about... I don't mind the small changes. So I'll give you an example of a really nice change. Tottenham Hotspur had their original badge and it didn't look great. And then they went old-fashioned with it. And they simplified it and it looked really good.
Simple. I like simpler. Simple looks good.
But if you got a coat of arms from your town, then you should wear the coat of arms. If you're lucky enough to... is it heraldry or head? Is that the word for it? Heraldry or...
Heraldry... Yeah,
that's like where the knight's coat of arms.
I'm not sure.
Heraldry.
Yeah, so if you've got a history, you can change it a little bit, but not too much.
Heraldry, the science and the art that deal with the use, display, and regulation of hereditary symbols employed to distinguish individuals, armies, institutions, and corporations.
There you go.
Very good.
Yeah. And examples of
heraldry there. Heraldry. That's what you want.
Are those shields, crests,
shields,
badges.
Crests. Yeah, so if you know of some decent shields or crests, email in to us. And also just give us your views. Do you like it when clubs vandalise their history? Is that your thing?
See, those crests and stuff are... It's like that's from a time where you would have people on horseback with banners. And
yes.
Go, who's that? Oh, it's them. Yeah. This is a world where there's the internet.
I want horses with banners. I want that thing on my bus. I want it on my website. Do you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of... It's the mindset that made England use graffiti fonts all over their stadiums because it's more inclusive. Because it speaks to more people. So, I was going to talk about Hugo Monier's... an article written by Hugo Monier or by Alex Spink I thought... I can't be bothered, so I'm not going to. I might save it for later.
Right. contact@gmail.com, patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the boys play. Let the boys end.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.